Hello, and welcome to Best Practice. I'm Lisa Leong, filling in for Richard Adey. This week's episode is brought to you by the F word, flexibility. As in flexible work practices, flexi hours, flexible mindset. It's a modern workplace buzzword. And these days, flexibility has become a prerequisite for optimum workplaces. But what exactly does it mean? How do we become more flexible? And crucially, are we ready to be flexible in our workplaces?
I'm Craig Robertson, and I don't think we have a plan to train people to be flexible for work.
I'm Peter Kelly, and I think that what flexible feels like is about what your choices look like.
I'm Greg Bamber, and there are examples of workplace flexibility in organisations as diverse as airlines and hospitals. And one of the countries that has pioneered in the field of promoting flexicurity is Denmark.
We're going all the way to Denmark. Well, Professor Greg Bamber is an employment and workplace change specialist at Monash Business School. Greg, what does the F word flexibility mean in a workplace context? I'm presuming it's more than just being able to work from home.
It's a good question, Lisa, and we can think of at least two dimensions of flexibility. From an employer's point of view, there's numerical flexibility. How many people have I got working in a particular place at a certain time? And also flexibility in terms of quality or skills. What kind of skills have the people that we've got working currently have? And we can also think of flexibility for whom? One person's flexibility, for example, from an employer's point of view, may be quite different from the benefits or disadvantages of flexibility from a worker's point of view.
Why is flexibility so popular at the moment?
Well, businesses are facing rapidly changing contexts, and so they wish to adapt their workforces and the way they work, the numbers of people that are working at any given time. But particularly in our Australian context, the notion of flexibility needs to be coupled with another F word, and that is fairness.
Tell us more about that.
Well, it may suit an employer to change the number of people who is working at the workplace at a given time. For example, a restaurant may be busy at mealtimes, but not between. An airport may be busy in the early morning and late afternoon. But it doesn't necessarily suit the workers to be employed for only a two-hour shift and then laid off and brought back for another two-hour shift very late in the day. And that's why we need to consider the different perspectives on flexibility.
So let's drill down into a case study. The airline industry is a good one. You co-wrote a book called Up in the Air, How Airlines Can Improve Performance by Engaging Their Employees. So how has the airline industry moved with the times and become more flexible, Greg?
The airline industry goes back about a century, and it grew out of the First World War. People had learnt to fly these magnificent men in their flying machines, and just 100 years ago in 1918, they were demobbed and some of them set up airlines like Qantas or British Airways. And so these were set up on broadly military lines with command and control kinds of management structures and hierarchies. They were highly regulated. There was concern about safety and security. And it was this until late in the last century when we saw the introduction of new entrant airlines who had come from a different perspective. And the classic case was in the United States, in Texas, of all places, where Southwest Airlines began in the early 1970s with quite a different approach.
What was different about their approach?
Southwest tried to be flexible in terms of the organizational approach, not working in a hierarchy, not siloed organizations, but working in teams. And the team working approach gave better flexibility, which gave better productivity. Customers were treated better. The Southwest Airlines has been very successful economically. Unlike nearly every other airline, it hasn't retrenched people.
It's
never retrenched people, and it's been continuously profitable since it began. most other airlines around the world have been through boom and bust periods of retrenching people and then recruiting more people because it's a volatile industry. It faces issues like terrorism and weather crises and downturns in the economy and so on. So, like many businesses, airlines have to try and be flexible, but there are different ways of doing it. And Southwest has encouraged its workforce to be flexible by assuring them that it's not going to retrench them. It'll retrain them and redevelop them and offer them new opportunities when there are slumps in demand for air travel, for example.
So why haven't other airlines followed suit?
Well, many other airlines have tried to follow suit, both the older legacy-style airlines and also the newer entrant airlines. But many airlines haven't adopted the full pattern of flexibility that Southwest Airlines has adopted. So the new entrant airlines like EasyJet and Ryanair in Europe have adopted some of the approaches from Southwest, but Ryanair in particular has not treated its workforce well. It doesn't treat its customers well. It ruthlessly cuts costs, and it's now facing a whole series of strikes right across Europe, for example, and customer protests about being dumped when flights are cancelled.
So what's the benefit of teamwork then in this flexible environment?
Well, teamwork allows people to draw on different skills to solve problems. So if an aircraft is running late, you can mobilise the skill set of the pilots, the flight attendants, the check-in people, the security people and so on to try and accelerate the turnaround of an aircraft and catch up on time.
So perhaps if Ryanair was willing to be more flexible with its operations, it might not be facing those issues now. Craig Robertson is the CEO of TAFE Directors Australia and is in Melbourne for the World Federation of Colleges and Polytechnics Biennial Congress. Craig, if flexibility is so important, why do you think Australia isn't really ready for a flexible work future?
Well, Lisa, there are lots of organisations within Australia and overseas, such as the IMF, the World Economic Forum, that is telling us that technology and automation is fundamentally going to change the nature of jobs. Don't worry, we won't lose jobs. In fact, we'll create new jobs, but they'll be very different jobs. And our problem at the moment in Australia is, firstly, I don't think we are planning for that. Our education system is not ready to respond to that.
If our education system is not ready, in what way can we change it?
The problem we have in Australia at the moment is it's a competency-based training system for vocational education and training in Australia. And what you do is you break that down like a work breakdown structure and you say, this job entails these 12 tasks and I'm going to train you in those 12 tasks. The problem with that, of course, is you finish your training, you go into a job, and it's highly unlikely that you're going to get a job that has those 12 tasks. Those tasks change. So what we need to be able to do is give people broader technical skills, but capacity to think, capacity to problem solve, capacity to engage. And we just don't focus enough on that in our training. And in fact, what we think really needs to happen is a stronger capacity building in terms of interpersonal skills. And sometimes you can get that in a simulated environment. You can also get it by being trained in the workplace. Our issue that we're saying here in Australia, we know that needs to happen, but our education system is not saying that we need to do it. And so if you're not told to do it, nor is it measured, you're not going to do it.
So what are you going to do?
Oh, well, we're working really hard with the federal government because it's the federal government here in Australia that specifies the qualifications in vocational education and training. It's a centrally controlled system. What we want is some flexibility and adaptability given to our TAFE institutes so they can develop courses that can be put into place very quickly. They'll still meet the needs of the industry, the local industry, and of course they will focus on making sure those skills are job ready. So we're not going to run off and do a whole pile of courses that don't mean anything or won't lead to anything, but we'll be able to do it quicker.
So Craig Robertson, there is a term being used that I'm hearing a bit in business, the self as enterprise. What does that mean in a vocational education context?
That's a really good question. At the moment, what we do in Australia, that seems to be the problem. We make an assumption that we're training somebody to go into a full-time job for the rest of their life. That's not going to be the case. We need to give people the confidence primarily that they've got the skills that people will want and to be able to make sure that they can navigate their way through the world of work. It may not be full-time, 9 to 5 as I have experienced it. It'll be a range of sessional work.
You're listening to Best Practice on RN. I'm Lisa Leong. Well, that was a bit of a set-up question, Craig, because actually we have a person who's written a book called The Self as Enterprise. Professor Peter Kelly is Associate Dean of Research and Innovation at RMIT in Melbourne. Welcome, Peter.
Lisa.
So, Peter, you co-wrote this book called The Self as Enterprise. What did you think of Craig's go at defining the self as enterprise?
It was a really good go at defining. The idea, for instance, that if we had a job for life, then loyalty was a virtue in the workplace. But when we no longer have a job for life, flexibility becomes a virtue and we have to continually work on ourselves for the term of our natural life almost. There is no point at which we can stop.
And so by enterprise, do you mean like a project rather than a corporation?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a project. Your life is a project. It's a DIY project. It's something that you have to undertake yourself. You can draw on a variety of resources. If your family's well off, you've got more resources to draw on than if your family is not so well off. If you're in an inner urban hip environment, then maybe the resource you have access to be a successful enterprise, very different to what it might be if you're out in outlying suburb where those opportunities don't exist and you might have to commute. So the self as enterprise is really that person or that type of person that has those capabilities to imagine that their life is an ongoing project, that they will have to work on themselves over the course of their lifetime if they want to remain employable. And in that context, I'm interested in those people that can't do that. So, for instance, I have a research project at the moment where I'm looking at an arts-based social enterprise environment. Working with marginalised young people or a homeless, refugee, migrant background, the people who find it really difficult to imagine the self as enterprise, who don't have the skills and capabilities. And those social enterprises in that context try to intervene, provide accredited training in creative industries or in fashion and textiles, and try to provide, in the first instance, an environment that engages those young people who have disengaged, and then tries to establish an environment where they can train and upskill and come to imagine that this is something that they have to do for the remainder of their life, in effect.
Are there any other demographics that you think are affected by this new world order of flexibility? Because I'm thinking, in addition to perhaps our youth, maybe some of the more experienced, low-skilled workers. There's also my peers who are executives losing their jobs with restructures and redundancies.
Which is my introductory point. I think flexibility feels very different depending on the choices that you have. And it's that idea that we all have choices to make, and it's great if we do have choices to make. Lots of us don't have the same choices as others. The consequences of my choices might be very different to the consequences of your choices. And I think certainly in terms of what Greg was talking about, the ways in which often flexibility is about the benefit to the employer, flexibility for an Uber driver or a Deliveroo driver or rider looks very different to the executives of those companies who are, if you like, come out of a Silicon Valley environment where everything is about efficiency and effectiveness and hustle and the profit and those sorts of things. And they build a business model around that and then require their contractors, not employees, who don't have sick leave, who don't have superannuation, who don't have annual leave, to be incredibly flexible. Flexibility there looks very different.
So what can the individual do about this?
If your life's continually about making choices, then if you're not well equipped to live in that sort of world, then anxiety and uncertainty and stress emerges. And I think partly that's about that uncertainty and that ambivalence that goes with choice. You know, if you have a choice, which one do I make?
Craig Robertson, is stress something you'll be addressing in the classrooms, teaching students the importance of being resilient in this fast-changing environment?
In fact, I was talking to some leaders yesterday from around the world and they were all saying that anxiety is on the increase right across the world amongst their students. Now, what's the cause of that? We're actually not sure. But whether that's about what is my future going to entail, Have I done well enough in school? What is going to be my future? So, in fact, we've committed to, as a federation, to try to do some work to try to build up those the confidence and the resilience of those people. And what we can do, firstly, is by saying, giving a very positive message that whilst there is automation coming, there is flexibility that businesses will require. If we give you the right skills, you have the right aptitude and attitude, you'll be right. But you need to invest in your skills.
You're listening to Best Practice on RN. We're talking about flexibility in the workplace. Greg Bambers, let's visit the concept of flexicurity. This is something that comes from Denmark. What exactly is it?
Well, flexicurity, the term is an amalgam of the two words, flexibility on the one hand and security on the other hand. And the Danes, and indeed other Scandinavians, have been very successful at adapting in their workplaces, partly because they have a strong culture of training and development and safety net, which gives people a feeling of security. So there is much less resistance to change in workplaces in that context than there is in a country like Australia, which does not have the strength of culture in terms of training, development and social safety net in the way that the Scandinavian countries do. And the Danes have been shown to be the happiest people in the world, and possibly this context is giving rise to that degree of happiness in Denmark.
So if we could steal something from Denmark, what would you advise we do to get this balance between flexibility and security?
Well, we need more of an investment in our people, in training and development, and providing people with the skills over their lifetime, as been articulated by Craig and Peter, rather than employers having a notion of hire and fire. We get rid of a bunch of people if they haven't got the right skills and we'll hire another bunch. Let's retrain the people that we have got through our TAFE system and so forth.
Craig Robertson, music to your ears.
Well and truly, I love the idea of more students coming through TAFE to redirect their life. And it is true that you, if you have a disadvantaged background in terms of getting a job, you can come to a TAFE and you can be trained to get you on your pathway. And it won't be one job as the final outcome. It'll be a series of jobs. I'm amazed at how many people who've come into a training environment saying, actually, I don't think I'm any good for anything. Get them trained and it starts them on their pathway.
This is Best Practice on RN with Lisa Leong. Let's go now to something called the drag coefficient. Professor Peter Kelly, what is that?
So this was a term that was bandied around in Silicon Valley at the height of the tech boom. The ideal drag coefficient is zero. That means you have no responsibilities. You're unencumbered by family, friends and home. You're an ideal employee if we're talking about flexibility in that context. And so what happens if you've got a partner and if you have children and a dog and a cat and a house? You're not willing to move. You're less likely to be flexible. It's a really good illustration of the extremes to which flexibility can go and the demands that it places on an individual, because it's all about what that individual can actually then contribute to the organization's profitability. If you come with those drag coefficients, you're less attractive than somebody. And of course, when we look at what a zero drag employee looks like, he probably looks like a 30-year-old white guy, doesn't have any aging parents to look after, doesn't have a partner, doesn't have anything that will encumber them in terms of flexibility.
So, Craig Robertson, what's your drag coefficient?
Pretty high.
I think it's very high, Lisa. I'm at a certain stage in my life that I'm not one of those 30-year-olds contemplating what my future career is, but certainly my children are. And what you really want to be able to make sure is, A, they can have some security and satisfaction in life, but also that they can also secure work at the same time.
And Professor Greg Bamber, what do you think about this drag coefficient concept?
I think it's rather intrusive into the personal life of individuals, and it involves a set of assumptions that just because you might have kids or a partner, then you're not going to be flexible in the workplace. For example, I have kids and a partner, and I've moved around the world and interstate and changed employers and changed industries and so forth, as have many other people. So I don't think we should assume that just because an individual is in a certain stage of their family and so on, that they're going to be a less desirable employee and going to be discriminated against in terms of an organization's recruitment practices.
Craig?
One of the interesting elements that can play out globally, of course, is that our work can now be bundled up or commodified, even our thinking work. And if indeed we're not flexible in Australia, in some of those cases, it's very easy to shift it off to another economy where you can get that work done with less drag and certainly lower wages. And so there now is a worldwide competition for talent and skills. And this is an important thing that we need to bear in mind.
Well, 20 years ago, I would have been the perfect employee according to the drag coefficient, but I've got a family now, I've got a house and a new puppy called Buttons, so I'm all drag at the moment.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you to our guests today who have explored the depths of the F word, flexibility. We had Craig Robertson, CEO of TAFE Directors Australia, Professor Greg Bamber, an employment and workplace change specialist at Monash Business School, and Professor Peter Kelly, Associate Dean of Research and Innovation at RMIT in Melbourne.